Listeners, welcome to the Content Callout, where we interview the thought leaders and really the trailblazers in the marketing space who have paved the way and continue to pave the way for all of us so that we get to benefit from their wisdom and their insights. Today, we have Rashad Tabakawala on the show, a man who really doesn't need an introduction, but I'm going to give it anyway. He has a 40-year career in marketing, started out his career at Leo Burnett back in the day, ended up as the chief growth officer at Publicis Group, and recently left there in 2020 to pursue speaking about restoring the soul of business. And I really love that. That's also the title of his brand new book, which I highly recommend that you go pick up. In today's episode, we talked all about what that actually means and how marketing has changed and will continue to change in a post-COVID-19 world. He leads off the conversation with three amazing tactical takeaways. I'm not going to give away too much because I think you really need to listen to this episode. Thank you so much to Rashad for being on the show. Enjoy. Rashad, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
I'm so glad that you can be here. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with the listeners. And I know that on your email to me, you were very humble and you said, well, I hope there is some wisdom. I'm sure there will be. As we start off with every single show, we like to hit the listeners with three actionable tactics or strategies that they can take away right away. And as you know, the marketing audience here is eager to hear your wisdom. So go for it. I'm handing it right over to you immediately.
Absolutely. So here are my three points. The first is brainstorm and build a competitive product or service that could destroy you. And then ask yourself, why aren't you doing it once you actually develop such a product? This is particularly true today in a post-COVID world. It's always been true. But in a post-COVID world where consumer behaviors have changed and there are going to be all kinds of new technologies, that's the first. The second is, do not think of consumers. In the world of marketing, we think of consumers and we think of customers. I would rather that you think about people, human beings, or gods. When you think about consumers, you look at somebody through your product or your service lens. I do not define myself through my product or service lens. For instance, the Procter & Gamble company, which is an extraordinary company, amazing. You have to also remember that every single product that P&G makes actually does only one thing. It removes dirt. It's a dirt removal company. It removes dirt from your butt. It removes dirt from your teeth, from your clothes. Do you define yourself by dirt removal? They don't define you only as a consumer. They define you as a person and as a human being, and that's what you should do. And the third is whenever you make a market recommendation or a marketing recommendation to your client, to your boss, to your colleagues, build a case for the exact opposite of your recommendation. If you cannot build a case that's strong enough that opposes the case you are making, I'm not really certain you've thought through both sides. That's it.
Powerful. Fantastic. What an amazing way to start off this interview. And I actually, we're going to get into the long form of this conversation shortly, but there is a couple of things that I really want to dive into there that I think are just fundamentally may change the way that people think about how they approach the market and how they approach marketing in general. You said brainstorm and build a competitive product that could destroy you. When you're talking about it from that perspective, is that to force people to think outside of sort of the confirmation bias that may exist about their product, or is that just to get them to think about what they should be doing?
It's three different things. Both of those, which is when you're so close to your product, you only look for why your product is so cool. Many of us breathe our own fumes, and even though they stink, we think it's perfume. So that's one, which is very important. The second is to look at from an opposing point of view, which is look from the outside in. We tend to be too close to the inside. But the third and the most important is whenever something comes to come and question your product or your service or destroys your product or service, it tends to come from outside your category.
Yes.
Uber came from outside. Dollar Shave came from outside, right? And so if you suppress yourself and think only about people and what you can do to meet their services, you create a new product or service. And it's a very fundamental thing that most companies don't do. because they both have a confirmation bias. And most companies at some particular stage are so busy managing each other that they've forgotten to manage the world outside.
Mm, I love that. There is something else that you said there that I found super interesting about thinking about people and not necessarily consumers. I often find with a lot of the companies that we work with, they're so focused on product and looking at consumers through the lens of that product and so focused on the scale formula that they almost disassociate themselves with the actual consumer. And so the consumer becomes a unit, so to speak.
Yeah. So what basically happens is consumer becomes a mathematical term.
Yes.
And I happen to have an undergraduate degree in advanced mathematics. So I understand math, but the reality of it is this. Almost nobody wants to have a relationship with your brand, excepting the brand manager wants to have a relationship with their brand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when you think about consumers, you think of people as cows, whom you basically send messages, which
yes.
is your form of grass, right? And then through the funnel, you basically milk them dry.
Mm.
It's a very horrible way of thinking about people.
Mm.
So I always tell a marketer, if you are a consumer and I've got you numerically pegged and controlled, right? I send you streams of information. I analyze you, I pulverize you, and I milk you. How does it make you feel? And you say, I cannot be defined by numbers. But I said, you just defined everybody that way.
Mm. And so if we're not going to look at them that way, and because this is very typical about how most marketers look at product and look at the funnel, how should we be changing or shaping that?
So what I do believe is the fundamentals of marketing still hold and they still apply. So a lot of what you have learned about marketing continues to be true, excepting the very opposite of what you have learned also tends to be true. Let me give you an example. We always thought about segmentation in marketing, and segmentation was you took large segments or large people, crowds, and you made them into segments you could market to.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like starting with a cow and getting to a steak.
Yeah.
Right? But search engine marketing, which is extremely powerful, starts with a one person and you re-aggregate them into lots of people. So you start with a piece of mince and you make a hamburger. So segmentation marketing makes sense. Yes, it does. But so does reaggregation, which is the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Think about scale. Big scale sometimes makes sense. You'd love to have scale of spending. You'd love to have scale of manufacturing. You'd love to have scale of distribution. But then when you think about Kim Kardashian or Kylie Kardashian, who both have sold their companies for over $1 billion to Coty, they had 55 employees. They used their Instagram account.
Yeah.
All their stuff was outsourced, and they had a different scale. They did not have a scale of manufacturing. They did not have a scale of distribution. They used actually Shopify, and they did not have a scale of spending. They had scale of influence, scale of networks, and scale of ideas.
Hmm.
So yes, old scale matters, but there's new scale. And so that's another divide. So segmentation matters, but so does the opposite. Scale matters, but so does the opposite. Data matters. Because clearly data helps you both define, curate, it allows you to measure, it allows you to target, it allows you to identify. But on the other hand, tell me which brands were built on data. Data is like electricity. It's necessary, but which company separates itself on its use of electricity? People choose with their hearts and they use numbers to justify what they just did. The biggest brands are built on storytelling. So the true future is about how do you combine segmentation and reaggregation? How do you combine old scale and new scale? How do you combine data and storytelling?
I love that because there is now, just with voice and how voice is progressing and the long tail that exists in voice, I find that how is SEM going to change? How is search going to change as a result of that long tail in voice? And I love that you tied in storytelling into that. I think that fits in perfectly.
Storytelling is extremely important. So one of the things I now do in my supposed post-publicist life is I counsel a lot of board-level, C-level, global CMOs, CEOs, because they think I'm crazy enough to give them new thoughts and ideas. And as you probably have figured out, I'm extremely respectful, but I basically tell them, hey, what the hell are you thinking? Which they kind of like, okay? And because I've had a 40-year sort of successful career, they say, okay, you're not as stupid as you look. So just talk a little bit. Maybe we'll figure out something sensible in all your garbage. And one of the things I was talking to this gentleman, in fact, today, this person is European-based, so it was about 2 hours ago, was how to rethink Google, okay? So I said, you have to rethink Google because Google is not the Google you know. It's changing in the front of your very eyes.
Yep.
And the words that Google talks about is being responsible, being discoverable, and being useful. They don't talk about search. And for them, the future is voice, AI, and Android.
Yep.
The future is discovery, and the future is giving you all the answers, and you never have to leave the Google search page, which is why I told all the travel companies 7 months ago, watch out, they're coming after you. Booking.com understood. Expedia did not. A few others didn't. Their stock price went down. Because the reality of it is, if you live by Google, you can die by Google. Okay, so you have to be very, very careful. And these are the key things I try to get people to understand, that these platforms are extremely useful, but on the other hand, they're also taxes on your system.
And the interdependence that we have on those platforms makes us vulnerable.
Extremely vulnerable. So I've been doing a lot of work. One of the people who are very suspect of many of the platforms, particularly Facebook. Okay, so I'm actually one of the few people who go on the record. Almost nobody goes on the record against Facebook, and I do. The latest Financial Times had me there. And my whole stuff is like, we have a huge issue. And boardrooms are talking to me. I said, look, here's the big issue. You are highly dependent on a platform where you don't know how your data is being used or being leaked.
Exactly.
Number one, you have no power against them. The entire Fortune 500 accounts for 30% of their revenue. You have no strategic optionality. Your CMO tells me that they can't do without Facebook. You can do without me. You can do without Condé Nast. You can do without CBS, but you can't do without Facebook. So in effect, you're a drug addict telling me your drug dealer is going to tell you how to run the business. And by the way, in the future, how do you think they're going to grow? They're going to grow by basically coming after your business. They're not coming after the agency business. The agency business is useless. Right? So outside of the fact that, and then you have corporate reputation, because a lot of people like Mark Benioff calls them the cigarette company. So a lot of young people are saying who are funding the cigarette company. And then you have brand reputation risk, because it's whack-a-mole. They don't know how to run their platform. So outside of the fact that you've got brand reputation, corporate reputation, data risk, strategic optionality risk, right? And every other kinds of stuff. And then your CMO tells you you can't do without them, fire your CMO.
Do you think it's because people just get addicted to the tracking? They get addicted to the statistics?
They get addicted to the tracking, but the tracking is complete and total bullshit. It's like being in a goddamn hospital and you're looking at a monitor. The monitor says you're growing healthy, you're feeling weak, the doctor's growing fat. Ask the question.
Interesting.
Okay. So most board levels don't know that marketers bid against each other for Facebook. Facebook doesn't bid against Google for your business.
That's right.
You are bidding against everything. There is no duopoly. There are two monopolies. There is a search monopoly and there is a social monopoly, period, over and out, right? You start thinking differently, taking it to the boardroom. That's the reason why this particular boycott actually matters, not in the financial world, but because it's got to the boardroom. And boards of directors are mad as hell, and they aren't going to take it anymore. And they may not fix it today, but just you watch today that the FTC is now going to start deposing.
I saw that.
Oh, you should see what's going on. They don't know what's coming, okay? Every CEO is mad as hell. When Zuckerberg basically said they will be back, no. Okay. They're going to be back.
I was very surprised by that statement.
They're going to be back like Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Terminator. That's how they'll be back.
So all of this ties into maybe a great segue about how does this all affect marketing in the post-COVID-19 world? Because there is so much upheaval right now, not just in the marketing world, but just in the market in general, and everything's being turned on its head. So how does this change things?
So I'll give you the short answer, but you know, when you post this episode, I'll send you a link if I already haven't sent it to you. It's a 12-page piece I wrote. It's 12 pages, and you might say, oh my God, who wants to read 12 pages? But boardrooms are reading it, and even though I wrote it, and usually I don't like what I write, it's actually one of the smarter things I actually read it and say, it's not bad, it's smart. So it's called The Great Reinvention. And, you know, you should post it. But basically, here's what it is. There are four factors I'd like to talk about. The first factor is, why do I call it the great reinvention? A lot of people have called it the great pause, great recession two, great acceleration. Those are all correct. I'm not saying they're not correct. But really what it is something very different. This is not like, and I've worked for 40 years, so obviously I haven't been through the Great Depression, the Great Plague, or the World War II, right? So I'm now talking, I've been working from 1980 to 2020. It was my 40-year career when I was in business. So in those 40 years, I've seen 9/11, SARS, MERS, Ebola, the Great Recession. None of those are like this. None of those. Why? The first is, all of those tended to be one thing. They tended to be either a social problem, a financial problem, political problem, or a health problem. This is all of them together, right? Which is number one. Number two, those tended to basically happen to certain regions of the world. Even the Great Recession didn't happen to every region of the world. Right. This is every country in the world, which is number two. Number three, those things were a moment in time, right? Or 20 days, 30 days. It wasn't 90 days and counting. Mm-hmm. Whenever you take people, one of the chapters in my book is called Change Sucks. And what tends to basically happen is, if someone starts or stops a behavior for 60 days, they form a habit. Okay. So what we're basically seeing, a global issue that combines social, political, financial shock, 90 days plus, where people are forming new habits. And so the first thing is, therefore, this is different. So don't tell me New York recovered after 9/11. Don't, because the other thing is, it's 20 years of technology since 9/11. After 9/11, which is in 2001, there was no Zoom, there was no Facebook, Google search was barely available, right? I mean, people don't seem to understand it's not that moment in time. So that's a very important thing. But there are three big specific changes. So one, my stuff is, don't go back and look at the history books. The history books don't have this in them. There are some human things. I'm not saying humans are going to completely change because of this, but there'll be certain behavior changes, ups and downs. People will still want to meet. People will still want to connect. People will still, that's not going. But here's the key things I say that from a human perspective. So this piece says there are three key things people should think. One is fragility, resilience, and resurrection. Okay. So fragility is, I believe that what we have is fragile people, fragile businesses, and fragile society.
I agree with that.
So people are fragile because they're obviously health fragile. They're very anxious about their future. They're very uncertain about where things are going to happen. They're fearful about their economics. So people are fragile. Companies are fragile. Big companies have drawn down lines of credit, have very poor balance sheets. In the United States, over 100,000 businesses have permanently closed if this goes on for another 5-6 months. And then society is fragile, which you've seen in Black Lives Matter. In Chicago, where I live, the 250% is the delta between an African-American who dies of COVID-19 versus the general population. So what you're basically seeing is a very fragile business, society, and people. So now you have to sculpt in resilience. You can't basically say, I am so fragile. You have to sculpt in resilience. So where do you find the, you know, bubble taped and bubble wrapped, right? How do you find it? So I believe what businesses are going to do, and I start with businesses, is they're going to get a stronger balance sheet. They're going to find ways to cut their costs. They're going to have more resilient supply chains. So one of the resilient supply chains is, I should not be only dependent on China. There's also going to be a resilient supply chain. I should not be only dependent on Google and Facebook. Okay. And this may take 2-3 years, but it's like, hey, we have a problem. Even though it's an increased cost, we must have resilience in our system. I think society is going to have resilience. I expect that we're going to get universal healthcare, higher taxes, and stronger unions. Okay. Mm-hmm. And just the reality. Someone who basically, you and I,
as a reactionary response to everything.
As a reactionary report to what's basically happening. And the last is basically individuals, which is you and I, are going to, I basically said, we're going to have to learn new things. We're going to have to be companies of one. We're going to have to build brands, and we're going to have to cut our costs. Okay.
Yeah.
And then resurrection, how do we come back as a resurrection? That is where I basically tell every marketer, and I'm spending a lot of time with boards, is do the following. Ask yourself first how business has changed for colleges, conferences, and travel. Now think about how your business may have changed. What will consumers do differently? What will they want more of, less of? People, more or less of? Humans, more or less of, right? That's number one. Number two is, how has COVID-19 impacted your business? What shocks has it revealed? What fault lines? What resilience? what new competitors is it bringing up, but what new opportunities is it bringing up? And the third is, if you were to start your business today, because all your plans, which are dated December 29, set them on fire. They make no sense. If you start business today, knowing we're entering what I call the third connected age. So the first connected age was about search and e-commerce, still around. Second was about social and mobile, still around. Third is going to be about machine learning, voice, 5G, and cloud. So in this world, with a different customer behavior, if you were to start again, what would you start? That was my opening piece of advice. So do those three and move forward, and that's how you resurrect your business. And resurrect means you're starting, you're not restarting.
Yeah. I had a conversation with a senior executive at a company the other day, and they said, well, we just got to follow the business plan that we had last year. I was like, it's useless. Just burn it. Throw it in the fire and have a good time tonight. Drink its sorrows away. Off you go. You got to create a new plan. None of that applies anymore.
Absolutely.
Because everything has changed. I love the way that you tied in the resurrection piece out of it, because you've got to identify where you're fragile. Then you've got to react to that, right? Fill that. And now you've got to resurrect that.
Absolutely.
So how does that change the building of brands? Because over your 40-year career, you've seen how brands have been built and it has changed. How is it changing, and what did used to work and what works today?
So there are some things that used to work better in the past, which was getting distribution and shelf space, spending a lot on television, right? And communicating about your brand and managing price and promotion. And I'm not saying those are not possible, but those are less relevant today. I think the big changes really are the importance of humans finding things, which is much more they coming to you versus you going to them. Mm-hmm. The importance of utility, the importance of what I would call influencer marketing, and the importance of basically interaction. So the world is moving much more into less about communication and more, are you offering a solution? Are you easily accessible? Are you delivering value and values? And are you creating a great experience?
The thing there I found super interesting, and this is totally aligned with everything that I've been researching lately, is them finding us, not us pushing ourselves on them, and the connection that's required there. Because there's a human connection that's required between brands now and their customers and the people. And so the question ultimately becomes, is there an easy way to create that connection? And if there isn't an easy way, how should we be doing that?
You mean the connection with individuals?
Yes.
The best way to create connections with individuals is to, I think, really understand the purpose and values of your company and what benefits you actually deliver, which is, are you truly delivering a real benefit and solution? So one of the things, I wrote a piece called The New ESG. So a lot of people talk about environment, sustainability, and governance, and those continue to be right. But what I do believe that we're moving into a world of is employee, society, and government, which is, if as a company you cannot look after your employees, don't tell me about your brand values. I'm not interested. Okay. Society, if you are not thinking about the ramifications of what you do when you make money on society. So for instance, the issue with Facebook is it's a great company with great people that does serve some value, but it's become toxic. It's become weaponized. And you basically have a boy king who refuses to understand that. Right? And then government, which is, it's all very well saying how much you care, but you go out of your way not to pay any taxes. That's a problem because we need government, right?
The system still needs to be funded.
The system needs to be funded. You're a company, the impact on society needs to be understood. And if you cannot look after your employees, not provide them with a living wage, not provide them with healthcare, not provide with them training, that I believe that all your purpose and values are nothing but big ideas roaming free on your website. That's about it.
Is it a result of now just our customer education and what's become more important to them over time? Because previously, this may not have been on the radar of the average consumer. But today, especially with what we see around the human rights movements that are going on, they're just deciding, I'm just not going to buy that anymore. I'm like, it's done. And people are voting with their credit cards. They're just like, I'm done. We're moving on.
Yeah. So I think there are a few big shifts. The first big shift is there has been awakening all over the world, either positive or negative, through both COVID-19, through Black Lives Matter. What I mean by positive or negative, I believe they've been positive in the fact that people are rethinking. It's been negative because clearly neither COVID-19 or George Floyd's death in any way is in itself positive. Mm-hmm. Okay. But they're sort of the thing that's come out of it. So people are really rethinking. The other one is there is, without a doubt, a generational shift. There is a very big difference between older people and younger people. And this is not just about, okay, boomer, it's across the world. Because for the last 10, 15 years, since 2008, 2009, so it's been a decade, you have an entire generation of people who have basically been living with social, mobile, search, e-commerce, blogs, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And another generation, which is like mine, where I have to get up in the morning to learn about these things, and I do because I don't want to be left behind, but a lot of my colleagues don't. And even with everything I learn, I'm not exactly sure I know what I'm talking about, which people can find out on this piece. But in effect, there's a generational shift. And so what has begun to happen is, I truly believe that we are marketing to the gods, right? So I even don't stop at people and humans. I basically say we have godlike power. So when I see what my daughters who are in their 30s are capable of doing with technology and they do in front of me, it's very different than what I did. Now, they have that. But on the other hand, they are human. So they are moved by storytelling. They are moved by positive values. They are moved by empathy. They are moved by authenticity, which was always true. But how you express it is no longer can you just say, I am authentic. They're going to come and say, show me.
Yeah, because now we have access to everything that you do, and we'd better see it. Otherwise, we're not buying your stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, for some of maybe the people who are not comfortable with this, this is going to be a very difficult message for them to hear. And what we're basically saying is, look, you got to change, right? Things have to change, but change sucks, right? Change requires us to burn everything that we may have thought to be true and start again, start fresh. And that change process can be very difficult. What do you say to people who say to you, look, change sucks. It's hard. I don't want to do it.
So I basically say, A, I truly believe change sucks. It is extremely hard. I stayed in the same company for 38 years. I live in the same city for 40. I met my wife 48 years ago. So when people come to me and say, you change, I say, I'm happy. Why don't you? Right? So I do believe that change sucks. On the other hand, when you look at my background, it looks like I'm constantly reinventing myself and helping my companies change. Because while change sucks, irrelevance is even worse.
Ooh, that's powerful. While change sucks, irrelevance is even worse. Yeah, listen, I think that that's absolutely correct. And it's difficult, I think, for people to wrap their heads around. And look, we can be soft about it and we can say, you know, let's pat you down with cotton wool, we'll keep you protected. But at the end of the day, you have to adapt. You have to be willing to adapt how you're doing things to stay relevant. And to become irrelevant means the death of your business, the death of cash flow, and the death of something that could create positive value in society.
Exactly.
Well, Rashid, as we wrap up, is there anything, any last piece of advice that you would like to leave the listeners today?
So the last piece of advice I would like to leave is actually some form of a promotion, but it's actually positive promotion. So I have just sent you the Great Reinvention piece, which hopefully you can tag to this. And if they read that, it would be great. If they like the thinking there, then they can basically help a starving author and go to Amazon and type in R-I-S-H-A-D, which is my first name. And buy this book, which is called Restoring the Soul of Business, Staying Human in the Age of Data, which last week in The Economist, they reviewed four business books on stakeholder capitalism, including Mark Benioff's book. And they basically call this book, hands above all the others, the best book to read.
Fantastic.
It's actually a good product, but you can sample my thinking in this Great Reinvention. You can sample, obviously, my craziness by listening to this. But if you want more in great detail, including how to manage change so you don't become irrelevant, how to lead with soul, how to manage distributed workforces, and why there is too much math and too little meaning, you should get my book.
Amazing. We will definitely link out to that in the show notes. We will promote that. Listeners, I highly encourage you to go pick up that book. Rashid, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's a great honor and a great pleasure.
Have a fantastic weekend.
Well, an amazing episode with Rashid Tabakawala. Just incredible wisdom that he shared. a few takeaways for me. Brainstorm and build a competitive product or service that could destroy you. And then ask yourself why you're not doing that. Don't think of consumers. Think of the people so that you can truly understand their needs and wants. Marketing is completely changing in a post-COVID-19 world. Everything that we're experiencing right now, as Rashad said, and I agree with him on this, is habit forming. And so you've got to think about what kind of habits are being formed to ensure that you are staying relevant. And the thing that I loved most about what he said was, yes, change sucks, but not as much as irrelevance does. And that is a truly, truly powerful statement. Would love to hear your thoughts on this. As always, please follow us online. You can find us at www.contentcallout.com, or you can find us anywhere on social at Content Callout. Thoroughly enjoyed this discussion. Would love to get a 5-star review from you as well on Apple as well as on Spotify. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being here. Have a great day.